Elliot alcoholic. Bill asked me to introduce the speaker tonight. He asked me to spend a little time with her to get to know her. But little did he know, I've spent many hours late night with Lynn. Yeah. All in the front seat, never in the back. But it's an honor to get to do that tonight. I know if I was a chick, I'd probably ask her to sponsor me. She'd at least make the short list. And she's a transplant from Ventura, right? Yeah, she's with us here now from Kingsburg. She's a self-described terrible teenager. She's got 13 years going on. She'll have 14 in October, God willing. You know, I wanted to embarrass her and give her some shit, but I'm just kind of really excited to get to hear her speak. I don't get to make it here very often anymore, so it's a real honor to get to introduce Lynn S. from Kingsburg. Right on.
I think talking about what we did in my front seat embarrassed me enough. Thanks, Elliot. Nothing. I'm Lynn. I'm an alcoholic.
Lynn.
Obviously, I still have a drinking problem. Come double-fisted everywhere I go. Okay, first things first. This is my story. This is my experience. This is my strength. This is my hope. I might say things that will offend you. Fine. You can judge all you want to. I don't want to hear it. Take it to your sponsor. That's all I got to say. And I'm done, right? She's out. Thank you, Bill, for asking me to come and share my story tonight. It's always an honor and a privilege and exciting and nerve-wracking all at the same time. I was going to open up with some really distasteful jokes about other 12-step programs, and I thought, nah, I'll save it for you later, Brett. And maybe you, Kirk. There's your name drop, all right? My sobriety date is October 1st, 2006. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor. And here's my one kicker of why I was a little bit hesitant to come and share tonight. I am still searching for a new home group. So I was told when I got here to get a sobriety date, get a sponsor, get a home group, and stick to it. As Elliot stated, I am a transplant. So April of this year will mark my 3 years since I jumped off and packed up my kids and quit the job and got rid of everything and moved into a motorhome with no job prospects, very little money, and just to know that God was going to take care of us. You know, it's been an interesting road, and the story behind, you know, the home group, I had a meeting picked out. When I moved up here, I was solely doing women's only meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous because that's where my sobriety had guided me. So I had an AA women's meeting that I had found before I moved up, and I went, and it sucked. And one of my sponsees from down south told me exactly what I told them. You have to give a meeting 3 times before you judge it and choose to walk away. All right. So I went 3 times, and it still sucked, in my opinion. Part of it was because you guys do AA wrong up here. Just going to say. So then I stumbled across the Tuesday Night Women's Amity Group in Visalia, and I fell in love. Absolutely fell in love. It was an amazing meeting. You know, it worked for my schedule. There was phenomenal recovery there. You know, every time I went to the meeting, I heard about God and the steps and sponsorship. And it was amazing. And then my ego got in the way. And my feelings got hurt. And I'm not going back to that meeting anymore, you know. And this is really just my story. And, you know, over the course of the last year or so, you know, life has one more time changed, because that's what happens in sobriety. And so I've been in this place the last year where, you know, I do a lot of traveling. I go back down south a lot. I go up north for work. And so I haven't found a meeting for one that I can make every single week. You know, and I'm still trying to find that comfort. And so I'm only sharing this with you because for me, that first year of sobriety, you know, and all through having a home group has been very important to me. And so I'm doing what alcoholics do. I'm justifying my bad behavior. You know, I mean, that's the reality, right? So my ego and my my ego is still driving me a little bit, but I'm extremely uncomfortable to not be able to identify that I have a home group, and it makes me sad. You know, I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm working on it. You know, there is a meeting, Saturday morning, women's meeting, that's a 12 and 12, and I absolutely love it. You know, what I was taught and what the AA literature tells me about home groups is it's a place to be accountable, and it's a place to be held accountable, and it's a place where I'm going to invest in the health of that meeting. You know, and fortunate for me, I have a very amazing life today, and so I'm gone a lot on the weekends. So my sponsor and I are working through that, you know, and we'll figure it out. So I'll figure it out. So that's my little disclaimer. No home group. Wah, wah. Qualify. Let me qualify a little bit. I'm not big on the drunkalogs, but I did earn my seat here. So for those of you that have heard this, I'm sorry you're going to hear it again. My first drink, I was introduced to my first boyfriend, Jose, and he came in a bottle, and he was served up by a guy that looked like Jesus. And we went to town, and my first drink was a drunk. I was getting dragged out of the bushes at 12 years old by one of my older brothers. Woo-hoo. I was being bad. And, you know, I woke up the next morning, and I felt fantastic, and I was like, woo, God made me a tequila girl, you know, and then a few months later, you know, I decided to have a drink again, and the drink turned into a drunk, and I woke up the next morning, and I felt fantastic, and I was like, yep, God made me a tequila girl, you know. I got professional real quick. I had my first arrest and my first stint in an institution when I was 15. I like to share a couple of my stories. So I don't think I've ever shared this one from the podium. So when I was 15, I was rolling with some guys, and I will preface this by saying I'm an alcoholic who enhanced my drinking with a lot of other stuff. But I respect the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and so I can find my discussion as it relates to alcohol and alcoholism. The book tells me, though, that alcohol is but a symptom. So, like, I was a garbage disposal. I was a garbage disposal, guys. You know, that's how I was. And so, you know, I was hanging out with these guys, and I was doing what I do, and, you know, hit it up and getting drunk, and one of the guys had to go get a ticket taken care of or whatever at the courthouse. And so we go do that, and we're leaving the courthouse, and long story short, he hits a parked car. And we were brilliant. So it was me and this other guy and another guy named Rat. Literally, that was his name, Rat. And so we hit this car, and we're like, oh, crap, what do we do? You know, so we take off, and we drive to Fillmore, and we go and park in these orchards, and we come up with this elaborate story that there was somebody in the back of the truck that had put a gun to my head and, like, was forcing us to leave the courthouse in Ventura County, you know? And here's the dramatic of it, right, and the insanity is, like, I sat there, and I'm, like, Visine, mascara, making myself, like, I had just been crying, like, I had seriously been hostage to somebody. And then we drove to another police station in another town, and we went and self-reported that we were kidnapped. And that's how this accident happened. And, yeah. Whew. So Rat ratted us out, of course, right? Damn rats. Damn it. So, you know, I was only 15 at the time, and so the sheriffs were being very nice to me, and they didn't lock me in a cell. They put me in a room, and they call my mom, and they say, you know, we've got your daughter here. You know, if you'd like, you can come pick her up. And my mom says, keep her, and hangs up. And so the sheriff was, like, looking at the other sheriff with, like, this dumbfound look on his face, and the guy's like, what? And he's like, her mom just said to keep her, you know? So they called back. My stepdad answered, and so he came to get me, and I was two steps out the door, right? Like, two steps almost out the door, and he turns around, and he goes back to the reception desk or whatever, and he's like, did you drug test her? We need her drug tested, you know? And there it was, right? I mean, garbage disposal, right? Like, bling, I lit up every single light on that drug and alcohol test, right? So I got to go face the judge, and I didn't know it at the time, because I didn't know a lot, that if you lie about being kidnapped, it's a felony. Oops. So I was facing quite a few charges, you know, but first offense, all that. So instead of going to jail, I got put on probation, and I went into a mental institution for 30 days where I fell in love with the orderly. So see, my alcoholism is like right on track, right? Like professional. So fast forward, you know, I'll skip a lot of the other stories and a lot of the fun times. You know, I did get introduced to my first 12-step program after that stint in the institution. And I love any 12-step program that works for you. You know, it didn't work for me. So fast forward, 27. By this time, I've got a daughter I placed for adoption in high school. I have a 6-year-old son and, I don't know, 9-10-month-old son, July of 2006. And one more time, you know, I'm in that midst of insanity and just miserable, and nobody wants to talk to me, and nobody wants to let me in their home, and, you know, garbage disposal to the extreme. And, you know, the end of this day, I went off. I had my parents come pick up my kids, and my oldest son, who was 6 at the time, you know, I just told him a lot of maybe what you parents might tell to your kids when you're shooing them off for the night, like, baby, mommy's just tired. Like, I just need a break, you know, and my mom's telling me, you're sick, and I'm like, you're effing sick, you know, and all that. And so my son gives me a hug, and he's like, you know, Mom, will you do me a favor? Will you ask God for help? Okay, right? Like, God was non-existent by this time in my life. And so I went to somebody's house, and they wouldn't let me in, and blah, 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 blah. And anyways, long story short, canine cop comes rolling down the street. And, like, before this happened, I was sitting there in my truck, and I was like, I just wanted to go run my truck into a tree. Like, I didn't want to die, but I definitely wanted every bone in my body broken, you know? And I was just done, and I called that last person that was actually answering my phone calls, and he wasn't answering my phone calls, and so I was like, you know, I hear my son in the head, and I'm like, okay, God, you know, where are you? And it was very vulgar and disgusting, and like, you know, and I'm doing what my kid wants, you know, where are you? And then a canine cop comes rolling by, and again, one more time, the insanity, right? He was minding his own business. I stuck my head out the window, and not once but 3 times, are you looking for me? Like, literally flagged down a cop, right? And I'll tell you, like, my typical day at this point started off in my lounge chair in my front lawn with my ice chest and party favors. 9 a.m. usually. So this was like 6:30 in the evening, so I was well geared up. And, you know, I wasn't going to go run myself into a tree without having everything packed. So I had everything in my truck, you know. And so this cop pulls me over, and, you know, and he's like, what did you say? And I'm like, are you looking for me? And he's like, I wasn't, but I am now, you know. And duh. Yeah. So he's going through my truck, right, and he finds one thing. I'm like, are you going to arrest me now? I was, like, so excited, you know. And he finds, like, 3 things. I'm like, are you going to arrest me now? He's like, just calm down, sweetie. It's okay. And then he finds the last thing, and he goes, well, I'm going to arrest you now. No! Like, I was so dramatic, right? Like, on the curb. No! Whatever. Yeah, I'm going to jail. So I was facing quite a few counts on that one, too. I also found out when I had gotten arrested that my license had been suspended for 3 years. No idea. Just no idea. So, you know, I went to jail and I bailed myself out. And here's the kicker, right? Like, I'm definitely it was not hard for me to concede to my innermost self that I was real alcoholic, let me tell you. Because I bailed myself out of jail, and, you know, within hours of getting home, I was back hitting the bottle. You know what I mean? Shooing away the kids. I'm sitting in the garage, you know, go to bed, significant other goes to bed, 2 a.m., sneaking back down to the garage, hitting the bottle, you know. It's like what I did. And so my stepmom called me, and she found an outpatient treatment program for me to attend in Lancaster. I mean, I don't know who goes to Palmcaster to go get sober, but I was attempting it, you know. And so I moved up there, and I was doing this, you know, 9-month intensive outpatient treatment program. And I'll tell you guys, like, welcome to our newcomers. You know, I hope that you guys hear something tonight that just gets you through the night without wanting to pick up a drink and brings you back tomorrow for some more. And any of you old-timers that are struggling, I wish the same thing for you. You know, a drink still sounds like a good option for me today. 13 years of sobriety. Sometimes, not a drink, a bottle. Let me be clear. Need the whole thing. You know, so I did this. I started doing this intensive outpatient treatment program. And you know, timeline of the story, right? I got arrested end of July. My sobriety days isn't until October 1st. And so I continued to go, you know, even though I was doing all the right things. You know, I'd started going to AA, and I was walking to a meeting at 6:30 in the morning. And, you know, I got a sponsor. And And I was doing all the right things, but I just couldn't not get loaded. Like, that's what I do. You know, if anybody goes out and drinks and, like, for me, and again, this is just my opinion. If you have a problem with it, call your sponsor after the meeting. It's a good reason for you to get back in touch. But the reality is like, for me, there's no point in asking somebody, why did you drink again? I'm an alcoholic. Like, if I don't do everything, or at least a portion of the things that are suggested in those first 164 pages, at least a portion of them every single day, I'm going to drink because that is my solution. Not what it says in the book. I didn't know until I read the book, you know? So for me, it's like, I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to drink. That's what I wanted to do. And the reality was, is even going through all that stuff, I didn't want to be sober more than I wanted to drink. I really still wanted to drink. I didn't want to be sober yet. You know, with everything coming against me, it's like, well, maybe I should change my life. No, no. I like drinking. It was my love. Like, we had a thing, and it was powerful. And that's how, yeah, it was total backseat action, Elliot. In fact, yeah. Backseat, hood, trunk, like, where you got it? I'm good. Let's go. This is our thing. Like, we were in it. All in. I try to keep it clean at the podium, man, but it's just hard some days. And anybody that knows me knows it's really hard for me to keep my mouth clean. Like, it takes a lot of effort right now. Whew. You go to the back of the room. Trouble. I'm gonna just look this way. This looks like a nice, good, wholesome crowd over there. Anyways, let me fast forward. So, September 29th, you know, it was the first time I had put together a couple of weeks. I was feeling okay. I, at this point, you know, when my parents invited me to come to Lancaster and go to this outpatient treatment program, I had stipulations. I was allowed to live on their property, but in a trailer on the backside that only had electricity. No running water, no amenities, like you and the boys can stay there because you're still a mom and you have to be a mom. And so that's where we lived, and I was allowed in the house during the daylight or when they were home. And that was our restrictions. So my parents were feeling a little comfortable because I had a few weeks, you know, I was doing all the right things. I was getting up at 5:30 and walking to a 6:30 morning meeting with my kids in tow and, you know, I was towing the line. And they went out of town for the weekend, and all of a sudden that aloneness crept in, and that overwhelming feeling crept in, and that, yep, I want to be loaded more than I want to be sober kicked in. And I felt very trapped, you know. And so I stole my dad's car. I loaded up my kids, and I went to a pawn shop in a really crappy part of town in Palmdale, and I left my six-year-old to watch the baby, and I went and pawned my ring for like $100 because, you know, I needed to get stuff for the kids. And I went to the store, and I bought stupid snack crap, and then you know, I went and bought mommy snack crap. And fast forward, like, it was 2:00 in the morning, and I found myself in a basement with a beer in my hand in California City. And one more time, my six-year-old, my little angel, I love him, from the top of the stairs, he's like, Mommy, what are you doing? So there's a moment. We call it the moment of clarity. The way that it was described to me is there's a moment where God just pauses everything and allows you to see what's really there. And that was my moment. And I remember looking at that beer can and I thought, I'm hiding and I don't want to hide anymore. You know, I loaded up my kids and I went home and I called the sponsor that I had had, that I had asked to sponsor me in name. And it was 5:30 in the morning. And, you know, I learned a couple of things. Alcoholics Anonymous does not go on vacation, because she was on vacation in Las Vegas and answered her phone. She told me to get to a meeting, identify one more time as a newcomer, keep my mouth shut through the meeting because I literally had less than 24 hours sober, and call her later that day. You know, that began my sobriety. That one moment began my sobriety. And I claim October 1st is my sobriety date because it is truly the first 24 hours I had where I didn't put anything in me from the neck up to alter me. You know, and I'm very blessed to say for 13 and a half years I haven't had to pick up. Now, let me be honest. There have been a lot of days where a bottle sounded good, you know. There's only been a handful of days where I wanted to be drunk more than I wanted to be sober after I had worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous the first time. you know, the first time going through my steps for me, and I like to share this, you know, this has been my experience. When I went through the steps the first time, it really did teach me how to not drink alcohol. Like, it taught me about the disease of alcoholism and taught me how to start living a life without alcohol. You know, I do not believe that we finish the 12 steps and we graduate and we get a certificate and we're done. Yay! You know, no. I'm a big proponent. We continue to work these steps. In fact, right now I'm in the middle of a very thorough first 4-step. Again, I should have probably started with, I'm recovering, but I'm not well. Like, I'm sober 13 years, but I'm not totally well. I'm going to tell you that right now. I'm finding some very poor behavior going on. So anyways, when I worked these steps the first time, you know, it was really all I could do. And there was a lot of things that happened in my first year of sobriety. You know, very quickly into my sobriety, I lost custody of my kids, which was very disturbing to me because I'm like, now I'm sober. Why are you taking them now? Like, I'm doing all the right things, and now you're going to take away my kids. You know, so I had to move out of the house. You know, luckily I got to give over guardianship to my dad and my stepmom. You know, I got to do sober living for 2 months. That sucked. But I did it because I committed to it, and that's where I was at in Alcoholics Anonymous. If they told me to do something and I made a commitment, I did it. So I did 2 months of sober living, and, you know, I was working to get my kids back, and I was working these steps, and so I had a sponsor, my first sponsor that I picked, and I really liked her. She had this very genuine smile, and I wanted what she had. And then we started going through the steps, and I'm like, doesn't seem like there's a lot there. And the book says, right, like, frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. In order to capture the attention of an alcoholic, we must carry a message of depth and weight. Slightly paraphrasing, but I got all the key words. So she was frothy. She was frothy. I loved her. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous did wonders for her. But I just needed something more. You know, I needed some depth and weight. And so I moved on to this other sponsor who really just introduced me to the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and introduced me to this God of my own understanding. And let me tell you, you want to talk about a relationship? That's a relationship that goes everywhere. Everywhere. And I am in love with my God. I don't like him all the time because it's a real relationship. Like, you can love somebody and not like them all the time. God and I get that understanding. Like, why am I going through this? Like, why am I losing my kids in sobriety? I don't like you right now, you know? But she started taking me through the steps, and it was in a different way, you know? And so when she had me do my first step and really look at the things that were in, you know, unmanageable and I was powerless over, it wasn't very hard for me to identify those. It was hard for me to categorize them correctly. You know, the one thing that she always had me do, which was so amazing, was she had me define all the keywords in the steps, you know? And so she had me define powerlessness and unmanageability, but she had me define it in my own words first. So what did those words mean to me? And then go and write down the definition that's in the dictionary. And it started to show me how warped my perception was. Like, I was living a life based on this truth of what I knew that wasn't necessarily the truth of the facts. You know, and so as we started going through the steps, and she took me through one, and then we went into two, and, you know, part of what she had me do in two was identify those things that were unmanageable, and then do a second column of what would this look like in a God-filled, God-centered world. Ultimately, what would it look like if I did things right? You know what I mean? Like, what would it look like if I stopped screaming at my kids? Could I address things in a more proper manner? Could I take a time out and then be like, that was inappropriate, you know? So she had me start doing practical application with that, but she also had me sit down and define my God. And this was the first time, I was raised in church. I had had a very strong connection with the God of my youthful understanding. So she had me sit down and define what my God looked like, what my God's intellect was, and what my God was like emotionally. And this started a whole journey for me. You know, I'm a definite smart aleck. So he's Jeff Foxworthy. I realized recently he's got a little bit of Ron White in him. He's got to. Just stick up with me. It's like Jeff Foxworthy for the white trash and Ron White for the profanity, you know? Really super smart, like Einstein smart. Like, that's who he was. He made up all those other characteristics of being loving and understanding and patient. Like, all those things I knew nothing about. I literally had to go look up the definitions one more time. Physically, you know, I like men. I do like men, just not Elliot. And, well, not in that way. I mean, don't be all, you know. I do. I love him. You know, I like men, so my God's a man. Physical characteristics, you know, I was trying to think of where I felt most comfortable. Like, I feel most comfortable with big bicep arms and that big bear hug, you know. So my God's got big bicep arms. And that's just how I defined him. And I sat down with my sponsor to talk about this God that I had created and it was going to be mine. And she took me through step three. You know, before we said the prayer, she had me talk about that God that I had defined and then sit down and close my eyes and picture him. You know, and picture as though he was sitting right next to me on a bench. And because I had gotten down to such detail about this God that was mine, I could actually see him sitting next to me, you know, putting his arm around me. It's you and me, buddy. He was really sweet. And then we said the third step prayer, you know. And all of a sudden, I felt a comfort. And I felt a security, like I could continue to go forward. You know, I've done these steps before many a times. And I'll tell you, the only time I've really, like, jumped into that four step, like it tells us, like, okay, we do this next, like right now. The only time that I've really been able to do that is when I felt that close connection with God. And this sponsor set me up for that success, you know. So, right when we got done doing my third step, she told me that she was reconciling with her husband and moving to New Jersey. Wah, wah. She abandoned me. So there was a whole nother level of issues there. So I got another sponsor. And this sponsor, of course, took me back to step one. I was like, again, I'm like master of steps one, two, and three. And then I'd hear stupid things in meetings like, well, maybe God thought you needed to do those more. You know, whatever. Do one more time. So I met this sponsor. And the first thing that she did when she sat me down, we were getting ready, you know, to start the work again, going back to step one. And she said, what are some things that you want to achieve in your first year of sobriety? And I said, well, you know, I have this daughter that I placed for adoption. And it's an open adoption, yet I've never been open to it because I've wanted to get loaded. And, you know, I had the opportunity to be able to see her like twice a year and I never did. And by this time she was almost 12. And she was like, oh my God, I just met my birth mom last year. Let me share my experience with you. So that's where I learned, is it odd or is it God? Like, had Michelle not moved, I would have never met Joan. I wouldn't have been there to have that conversation. Joan gave me some good suggestion on how to try and reestablish that relationship. you know, part of reestablishing that relationship required patience. So she walked me through a little bit of that patience. Fast forward today, my daughter and I have an amazing relationship. It took about 6 months after I took the direction, and we reconnected, and we've been thick as thieves ever since. So that's amazing. I'm sober now. I can keep talking, Elliot. Oh, is that a different sign? International signs. I don't work all the place. So this sponsor takes me through one, two, and three, helps me dive in a little bit deeper in my relationship with God. But she really taught me how to do step three, right? Like, she really broke it down of that will in life being my thoughts and my actions. And like, if I'm really saying, okay, God, you get my thoughts and actions, that means there's certain behavioral changes that happen. Like when I'm getting angry on the road, I'm, you know, I don't do that if I'm living in God's will, right? It's going to make me pause and think. Took a lot of practice. Still takes practice. But she taught me a lot of things. Like, she walked me through scenarios that were happening in my life and saying, what would God have you think? And how would God have you behave? And so I really got to learn how to apply that step in every area of my life. And she got me to a place where I was ready to do that four step, right? I had a solid sponsor. I've got like 9 months of sobriety. You know, I'm ready to go. Like, I really want to dig in. Maybe 10 months of sobriety. Like, you know, I was ready to go. So I did all my four step. I had some really miserable nights, but I also had some amazing God shots in the middle of it. I'll tell you, there was one night I was writing, and it was one of those where, like, I'm writing about those deep, dark things that were really hurtful and really dirty, but I didn't feel totally dirty about them. You know, those kind of things. Like, is it okay that I did it? I kind of liked it, but I shouldn't have been doing it kind of thing. And I felt miserable, you know? And I'm crawling out of my skin, and it's like 11:30 at night. And, you know, I've been doing 6:30 morning meetings. That was my home group. So I'm, like, chain smoking out on the patio, and I'm, like, rocking back and forth, fetal position, you know? Like, I just want to drink. And everybody I associate with, they're all morning. They're 6:30 morning people. Nobody's awake. Nobody's going to answer their phone at 11:30. You know, the liquor store's open. It was one of those nights, right? Like, I want to drink, I want to drink, I want to drink, and I want to drink, I want to drink. I really want to drink. Like, I'm miserable. Make it stop. Like, I did not get sober to feel like this. One of those nights. And then my phone rings. Because up until this point, despite how I was feeling, I was still going to meetings. I was still putting my hand out to the newcomer. I was still giving out my number. I was still showing up. Hated it, but I did it. Because that's what you guys told me I needed to do so I wouldn't pick up a drink. So it's 11:30 at night, and my phone rings, and it's a newcomer I'd given my number out to a couple days before, and she wanted to commit suicide. Like, that was next level, right? Like, I just want a drink. You want to die? Like, what? So we had the conversation, you know, and gratitude, and that, yeah, AA's coming in full force, right? And so we started having this conversation, you know, and at the end of the conversation, here's what happened is, I didn't want to drink and she didn't want to die. Like, that's how the program works, you know, and it was another one of those, times where it's like, oh, that's what taking the next right indicated step gets me. It protects me when I am, like, unprotectable. Right? Because if I was left to my own devices, that was a known device night, right? Rock in fetal position. I have access to a car. I have access to money. I'm going to go get drunk. God took care of me, you know? So I finished my four step. The weekend that I finished my four step, I got a call from my grand sponsor that my sponsor had drank and wasn't ready to come back to us. To start all over again. And she was like, if you need anything between now and finding a new sponsor, I'm here. And I'm like, I need you to take me through my fifth step. Now, I did not know this woman at all. Like, I had seen her half a dozen times at meetings. She looked very prim and proper. I was done with my whole inventory. All of it. Yeah, even 69. All of it, right? And I was like, I just need you to do my fifth step with me. Like, I need to get this out and I need to get it over. And she's like, well, if you're comfortable with it, I'm here. And so we went to go do this fifth step because I just knew at this point, like, I needed to or I was going to drink. And I was carrying around all that four-step yuck, right? Because once you get to the fourth column, it's like, oh, I can barely clearly see what a piece of crap I am. I don't want to be that person. So we met, and we started going over my fifth step, and, you know, and she's making notes on a legal pad the whole time. And this chick, like, when I showed up, like I said, she was very prim and proper. You know, she had, like, the really expensive purses that even had, like, where it hung on the table because it couldn't touch the ground. It's so expensive. And, you know, and I roll up to her house and she literally has a white picket fence. Dude, gorgeous husband, pretty baby, all the toys. Yeah, oh, God. And I have to share my 69 inventory, right? I'm like, this is not happening. So I'm going through my inventory. She's making notes on this legal pad, right? And the whole time I'm thinking I did it wrong and I'm going to have to start all over again. You know, and then we come to my sex inventory. And you know, again, this is my story. Like, I liked it. I did it a lot. And I did it some more. And so when I went to go share with her, I was, like, really scared, you know, because I had gone to some places. Yeah, I did. And so when I went to go share with her, I was really, really nervous, but I was like, I wanted to be sober more than I wanted to drink in that moment. Just in that moment, you guys. So I shared it with her, and I was very pleasantly surprised because she was more of a hoe than I was. She had stories that put me to shame. It's amazing. I felt very comfortable. There was nothing I didn't leave out after that. I was like, let's talk about this. Like, is this okay? Even in sobriety, can we? Yeah, no, it was good. It was good. So I left her house, you know, and the book says that we go and sit quietly after we do the steps for an hour. After we do our fifth step, we go and sit quietly with God for an hour, and we kind of reflect, and is there anything that we left out and all that. So I went to my quiet place, and, you know, most people feel very light and lifted when they finish their fifth step. I got to that dark place, and I opened my car door because all I wanted to do was throw up. And here's why. I had, like, 10 months of sobriety at this time. You know, I was close. I had a little time in my belt, and I was still doing the same BS I was doing while I was drinking, except I didn't have any excuse. That was very yucky, you know? So I sat quietly for that hour, and God and I had a conversation, and then I called my grand sponsor afterwards, and I'm like, yep, don't feel better. Thought I was supposed to feel, have you joined some free? No. What do? You know, and she told me, like, you have an opportunity to change your behavior. Like, that's the gift that we get from five. Really, all four does is it outlines who we don't want to be, which starts to set up the design of who we want to be. And that's why we have six and seven that come right after. You know, and everything that she was jotting down on that little legal notepad was the beginning of my six and seven. She was helping me out to identify my character defects. You know, and she handed me that list too, and she told me not to look at it right away. I can see now why. So when I called her back, she said, you can look at that list, and now this is what you're going to grow from. And so I had all these defects, and the way that she had me do 6 and 7 is I wrote all the defects on one side, and then I wrote all the assets on the other. This is sad for me to even admit. I had to look up what the assets were. I did not know the opposites of a lot of those defects. I didn't know what it meant to be anything different than those defects I was living in, you know? And so she had me do those assets and defects. And then every morning I had to pick 5 defects, acknowledge that they were there, and then pray that God helps me walk with the 5 assets through the day. And I did that for a long time, you know? Then we took my 4-step and we created my 8-step list, and you know, we identified the amends, and there were some amends that I wasn't willing to look at, like my financial amends. I'll tell you, I'm 13 years sober. I just started making my financial amends 2 years ago. You know, there were some family members that I held those in my back pocket for a while. But then there were other ones where I was like, yeah, I'm ready to do this, you know? And I had some amazing experiences going through my 9th. You know, my first amends that I decided to make was to my mom. I thought, this will be easy. It's my mom, you know? So I went to her and I had my amends and, you know, here are the things that I'd like to apologize for and my behavior. And then we're supposed to ask, is there anything that I might have left out? Like, are there any other wrongs I didn't acknowledge that, you know, I could write? And my mom goes, well, you owe me like $2,000. I'm not doing that yet, you know? So that was kind of bad. She picked out some other things too. And it just showed me like I had done a lot and I had made a lot of progress, but there was still more work to be done. You know, I know my time's running out here. When I did my 10th, 11th, and 12th, you know, a lot of people call those the maintenance steps. I learned 10, 11, and 12. To be perfectly honest with you, other than when I am mandated by my sponsor and I'm going through the steps, that is the only time I rigorously do step 10 in a consecutive basis. Like, you know, she made me do my step 10 and I had to write on it every day for 2 weeks. So I did that every day for 2 weeks. And then once that assignment was done, I didn't write a 10th step every night. Like, no. You know, I did the 10th step when I needed to, but I didn't do it every night. I'm not a perfect. I don't get on my knees every day. You know, my conversations with God in the morning are like, yo, coffee ready? Like, that's how our conversations start. You know, and then 12, she threw me in, or step 11, you know, that sitting quietly with God. You know, God and I, as I said, we have a relationship today. You know, I struggle with that sitting quietly for multiple moments, and waiting to hear what he has to say for me because I want results now. So I still struggle with that, but I tried it, did the egg timer thing, I did all that. But really, you know, that whole continuing to get closer to God, like it's just a nonstop relationship with us, you know, and it's constantly evolving. And where I'm at today is, you know, God and I are talking all through the day. You know, he is my road dog. He is my ride or die. He is my partner. You know, he is my everything. And when I got the opportunity to start practicing step 12, you know, not just with reaching out to the newcomers, but actually sponsoring somebody, I was miserable because I got somebody that was just like me. And she was a pain in the ass. And I remember calling my sponsor. I'm like, I don't know what to do with her. And she's like, oh, you get to baby the baby. God bless you with yourself. You know, have fun. So I've continued to work the steps, and let me tell you, I know that I'm getting up to my time here. You know, I've worked these steps numerous times, and what I can tell you in continuing to work these steps is I am so much more closer to the version of the woman my God intends me to be today than even the year before, or the year before that, or the year before that. You know, there's certain things that happened. My kids stopped being afraid to ask me to make him dinner. That 6-year-old today recently got married, had a baby, and enlisted in the Army in a very short period of time. You know, but through everything, like, he has asked me to be a part of that. You know what I mean? And that daughter that I placed for adoption, you know, I'm one of her go-to people. My youngest son, who's 14, he doesn't know a mom that's drunk. Like, these are gifts that I've gotten. You know, this program has taken me to so many places. When I first got sober, the first 6 months, I couldn't hold down a job. I finally got a job at Burger King, and I could only hold that for 6 weeks. Loser. I didn't know how to be employable, you know. I didn't really get my first job until I had like 17 months of sobriety, you know. And then through sobriety, all of a sudden I got blessed with this job that was like flying me out of the country to go represent their organization. I spent my 7th, 8th, and 9th birthdays in other countries, AA birthdays in other countries. All paid for by my job. It was cool. You know, today, I listened to my speaker tape when I spoke up here in December of 2017, which was shortly after I moved up. I was crazy then. I'm still crazy now. But I remember I listened to the end of it, and at the end of it, I was like, you know, but life is good. Like, I have a life today beyond my wildest dreams. I had no idea. Even 2 years ago, I was just paying the bills, but I was paying the bills, right? Kids didn't hate me as much as they did when we moved up in April. Oh, that's good, you know. Today, it's like I had my daughter-in-law, after my son went to boot camp, call me and say, is it okay if I come live with you because you helped me? Wow. You know what I mean? Like, that's huge. That's the life that I have today. You know, I will wrap it up with this. I got a new sponsor 6 months ago. And through this not having a home group thing, I felt very uncomfortable. I felt very disconnected from Alcoholics Anonymous. But here's what you guys told me. You told me to stick to the basics, right? So I got a hold of that sponsor, and I said, I'm really uncomfortable. I need us to have a strong relationship. What do you want me to do? Now we meet every other week, and I'm in the middle of a four-step. Woo! Hate people for it, but I love it, you know? So I'm doing it. You know, I am chair of a committee for a roundup that's happening in Fresno. Don't like it all the time, but sometimes it's so much fun, you know, and I'm meeting people. And when I'm home, you know, I'm going to meetings, and I'm finding my bearings, you know, and all along the way, God and I are having conversations. Like, that's where my sobriety has gotten me to. So I do like to share one thing before I wrap up. My first year, I attended a Friday night meeting, and every Friday night, they ended this meeting with this reading. And I remember sitting there every day for the first year, like, I want that. Like, that's my hope. So I like to read it when I share. It says, the last 15 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. I have had my share of problems, heartaches, and disappointments, because that is life. But I have also known a great deal of joy and a peace that is the handmaiden of an inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends, and with my AA friends, an unusual quality of fellowship. For to these people I'm truly related, first through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives and newfound faith and hope. And as the years go by, working together, sharing our experiences with one another, and also sharing a mutual trust, understanding, and love, without strings, without obligation, we acquire relationships that are unique and priceless. There is no more aloneness with that awful ache so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach. That ache is gone and never need return again. There is a sense of belonging, of being wanted and needed and loved. In return for a bottle and a hangover, we have been given the keys of the kingdom. Thanks for letting me share.